Good morning, everyone. For the last 36 hours, we've been looking at four different sources of leaking radiation from four damaged, if not completely destroyed, nuclear reactors at the Fukushima Daiichi complex in Japan. And there's a possibility of involvement of two more reactors as well.
They'll never be used again once they've poured seawater all over them.
Right. So what's the state of this complex and what are the risks environmentally going forward? And we're talking really about decades here. I mean, people in Japan are trying to resolve what appear to be conflicting evacuation orders this morning. You got a sense of that from Peter Ford of the Christian Science Monitor. There seems to be a difference of opinion between the Japanese government, the Tokyo Electric Power Company, the utility here, and some foreign governments monitoring the situation, as well as international nuclear agencies over how this is being handled. This morning, some of the details we've already talked about, Japanese military helicopters trying to dump seawater on the reportedly dry holding pool for some of those hot fuel rods. Meanwhile, plant operators said they were close to finishing a new power line that could restore normal cooling systems and ease the crisis, literally plugging the plant back into the electrical grid. At the same time, the government in Japan is saying there may be a serious blackout tonight in Tokyo to deal with the rolling power crisis that's taking place as a result of all the nuclear difficulties. So David Biello joins us once again. We actually last spoke to you during the Deepwater Horizon accident, the BP disaster out in the Gulf. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that's right. I seem to be Mr. Disaster.
Yeah, David Biello is Associate Editor of Environment and Energy for Scientific American magazine. First of all, you know, there's been characterizations of is this worse than Three Mile Island and not as worse as Chernobyl. Forget all that. Are we in uncharted waters here on an engineering and where do we go next sort of basis, David Biello?
In uncharted waters, particularly given that the spent fuel pool you were just talking about, which appears to either not have water or have very little water, is completely exposed to the atmosphere. So if that does indeed begin to melt down, which it seems it may have already done, that radiation would be released directly. It has kind of nothing between it
right. And
the rest of the world.
Can I interrogate you a little bit on the science
Sure. Here
and correct me if I'm wrong, as I've been warning everyone this week, because a little knowledge is a dangerous thing here. Zirconium, which is actually the cladding that surrounds the fuel rods, when that's exposed to air, I understand it has a low combustion temperature, maybe 200 degrees Celsius, but it's also unstable on contact with air. It basically explodes if it's exposed to air. Is that true?
It doesn't explode necessarily, but it does because of the heat that it's exposed to from the interior, from the fission that is still kind of going on inside that hot nuclear fuel rod. It will start to kind of balloon and crack, and pretty soon it will be gone. And that's actually where you also get the interaction with the air and steam that gives you the hydrogen that's causing all these explosions we saw
and all,
over the last couple of days.
All of this instability and volatility, of course, are various channels for spreading nuclear material. Is this complex, no matter what happens from now on, basically a radioactive waste dump for decades?
Yes. I mean,
there's your easy answer.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to expand on that. But yes, there's no question that, you know, kind of the contamination is significant. That's why the workers had to kind of cease their efforts and take cover at various periods. This is going to be like Chernobyl.
Really? So in the sense that it is a permanent environmental impact on some level. Now, you know, because of the folklore of radiation and atomic era fears, and we haven't had a fatality here yet, and we should point out, you know, over the weekend, 15 people died in a bus accident here. If those 15 people had died at Fukushima, you know, we'd be going wall to wall on the coverage here. Does the folklore of nuclear make it difficult for us to sort out truth from hyperbole?
This is the real problem with nuclear power, because the risks are real, but they also tend to be overblown in certain cases. Radiation is something that we all encounter on a day-to-day basis. As industry spokespeople like to say, you get a lot more usually from a cross-country flight than you do from being anywhere near a nuclear power plant. And even the readings in the vicinity of Fukushima, once you're away from the power plant itself, are not that high.
But David, you're talking about overblown fears about nuclear power, and perhaps this what's going on in Japan is a good reason why people become panicked when we talk about nuclear disasters and radiation, which is that there's a lot of confusion going on. It appears like even nuclear experts aren't entirely sure of the answers of some pretty important questions. They talk about there being only one type of radiation, but two different kinds of dangers coming out of that plant, that it could morph into one. I mean, people aren't really sure what's going on, and that's going to lead to a sense of fear and sometimes panic.
Oh, there's no question that the nuclear industry faces a real challenge with communication. They have a long history of attempting to cover up accidents, not like this one, but smaller accidents. This one's a little hard to cover up. They have a long history of kind of taking the stance that that we know best, and you know, don't you worry about it, we'll fix it. And that is not, in my opinion, a recipe for reassuring people that that things are going to turn out okay.
So there is a responsibility here for the Associated Editor of Environment and Energy for Scientific American Magazine, David Biello. I mean, tell us, all right, the waste products from uranium fission seem to be cesium-137 and strontium-90, among some other poisonous chemicals. They have half-lives of about 30 years each. What is the chance that this stuff gets into the water supply in Japan, an island nation, ends up in the food chain, ends up, you know, in various places that are going to be around forever?
Well, so far, hopefully, that stuff is largely contained to the Fukushima power plant site. But if it does spread via fire, smoke, explosion, anything of that nature, then it definitely will be in the food supply. There's no question about that. It's still in the food supply in the region surrounding Chernobyl. But that region is roughly, you know, 30 to 40 kilometers around the power plant.
Right.
So it's not all of Japan.
Biello, you busy this morning?
A little bit.
You got plans? I mean, can you come back in a couple hours and answer some questions of listeners?
Sure.
We can get you. All right, great. David Biello, Associate Editor of Environment and Energy for Scientific American. Do you have questions about what's happening right now at the nuclear plant? I got mine answered. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. We'll have Biello back to answer those questions about 2 hours from now. Thanks so much.
I feel much more reassured when David Biello says don't worry than, say, the Japanese government.
Maybe a job possibility there.
There
get
you go.
Get David to Tokyo to help the Japanese
I don't
out.
Think he wants to go. No.